In the academic medical world, things can move quite slowly. Studies take time, and the process of getting original research off the ground can be a laborious process. But when dealing with a global pandemic, where the world is doing everything it can to get ahead of things, research that contributes to the global understanding is vital, and the quicker it can be produced, the quicker it can help form strategies for investigation, management, and therefore save lives. So it was great to see the urgent care community this week contributing original research to this fight on COVID. And to talk about this research paper, we are joined today by the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Urgent Care Medicine and one of the co-authors of this work, Dr. Josh Russell. So welcome back to our podcast, Josh.
Great to be back, Guy.
So I think I will give you the floor initially just to give us a sort of an elevator pitch of this bit of work that you've published. It's available through the Journal of Urgent Care Medicine online, sort of an e-publish before a full publish coming up later. So just give us a brief lowdown of what it is that you've produced here.
Sure. Well, thanks for this opportunity. This is something I think every clinician working in urgent care can relate to, is that we're dealing with a disease we don't really understand, and patients come to us, understandably expecting answers, and this is a time of tremendous uncertainty. So, one thing that we really wanted to do was get this full text article out for free to everyone, who has access to the World Wide Web, so that they could benefit from the findings of this study. And we were thankfully able to access data, a relatively large data set, because we had access to Urgent Care Network in New York City, which is obviously at this point in history the epicenter of this epidemic. And we asked a simple question, which was, is the chest X-ray a useful or necessary tool in the evaluation of patients with COVID? And while our study didn't fully answer that question, I think it gave us a lot of information as to how we could think of chest X-ray, and also a lot of ideas for further investigations in the utility of use of chest X-ray in urgent care settings.
So how did this come about? How did this sort of land in your lap, if you were? How did you come up with the idea or drive this forward? What was the genesis of this paper for you?
So the idea for this study came from the work of our lead author, Dr. Mike Weinstock, and the second author, Dr. Anna Echenique. Mike is a urgent care and emergency physician, and Anna is a radiologist, and they presented at a webinar where Anna was showing all these X-rays that she had for patients with characteristic findings of COVID, and it came to their attention that there was just a huge repository of these radiologists that were reading urgent care studies from New York had of X-rays, but we didn't really know what the denominator was. We just knew the numerator of these significantly abnormal studies. So we just asked a simple question: how many of these patients with positive PCR testing, which we had access to the results of these patients' PCR testing, had, unremarkable X-rays or X-rays that look like something else? And then we all got to work relatively quickly trying to answer this question, because we knew it was time is of the essence right now.
And you've managed to get 636 patients in this study. How were you able to get such a and so quickly as well? Because I mentioned at the start there that this is, the COVID, whilst it feels like it's been around for a long time, it's a very it's been a rapidly evolving pandemic. And to get 636 chest X-ray reports in such short order, how were you able to mobilize this sort of these numbers?
Right. So, I mean, right now, as it stands, New York City has nearly 600,000 cases of COVID, and the study was carried out in early to mid-March, when there were many patients that were still presenting to urgent cares. I think the level of people presenting now, it has gone down significantly there and elsewhere, because if people have mild illness, they're starting to realize that they're probably going to be okay. We're starting to understand this disease better. There's better public health awareness. But at that time, many patients with mild illness were still seeking in-person care at urgent care centers. And so it was, a time when PCR testing was starting to be more widely available, and providers were ordering quite a bit of chest imaging, I think, because it's a disease we're trying to understand still, and more data is felt to be good when you're dealing with an unknown entity. So to be honest, having a collaborator who runs these centers in New York was really the key to getting so many cases.
And then you effectively worked backwards from there, the positive cases who had a chest x-ray, and then you got 11 board-certified radiologists together to look at these films.
Right. Yeah, so the initial studies were read by a different group of radiologists, a more heterogeneous group of radiologists, and fully 70% of those studies with ultimately a diagnosis of COVID confirmed by PCR were normal, or read as normal by the radiologist. And even after we informed these 11 radiologists that donated their time and expertise to rereading these studies, almost 60% were still read as normal. And if you combine normal and minimally abnormal, then we get to a number of 89% were really in that category of normal or just mild abnormalities.
And that, I mean, that's quite striking, isn't it? And the heading, the title of your paper here, A Normal Chest X-ray is No Guarantee. Before this, as you say, maybe in earlier March when people were coming to urgent care, why were chest x-rays being done, do you feel? Is it what were the sort of the clinical reasons for it at the time?
That's a great question, and it's really provider dependent. So working in urgent care, you realize that you order chest x-ray sometimes because you're trying to refine your differential diagnosis. You're thinking of other possibilities besides COVID. You're also ordering chest x-rays as patient satisfaction sort of tools. You're ordering it based on whether or not there are a bunch of other people to be seen, and the utility of something may seem more when there's no one to be seen versus if there's a full waiting room. So the indications were not known, but it was left to the provider's discretion. The provider did not know at the time of the evaluation that the patient did have COVID. So this was presumably based on some constellation of respiratory symptoms and or shortness of breath.
And then you've had to work very hard to put all this together and to come to the conclusions that you came to. So how is this, where does this put you now in terms of this study? Where's next? What's it told you now, and where do you see this going next? What's the next step from here?
Yeah, I mean, from the retrospective design, the amount of conclusions that we can draw definitively about the utility of chest x-ray are fairly limited, but it does further lend quite a bit of evidence. This is the largest study to date of chest imaging for COVID patients, and certainly the largest in urgent care. And we're getting more validation of this notion that there's really several phenotypes of this illness. And the phenotype that walks into urgent care is unlikely to be a phenotype that will have correspondingly abnormal chest x-rays. We're hoping down the road to have access to the outcomes data for these patients. And unlike in some of the countries with nationalized healthcare systems where all the records are available for researchers who have appropriate IRB approval, for us, we'd have to do quite a bit of legwork to find the ultimate outcomes, but we do want to find out if a normal chest x-ray is a predictor for necessarily a good outcome, or is it just that it depends on the phase of illness, and if you take a chest x-ray before day 3 or 4 or 5, that they could go on to have a severe illness or a mild course, and we really can't say from that initial chest x-ray. Which leads me to the second question, which is a chest x-ray always normal if a patient has had symptoms for less than, for example, 3 days, 5 days, something like that? We know that almost everyone decompensates after about day 5 of symptoms. So if we know that someone has had symptoms, for example, for less than 5 days, and we're not really considering anything else high in our differential, and a patient with less than 5 days of symptoms is guaranteed based on some large data set like we have to have a normal chest x-ray, then that now gives us the license to not order this study, which is not only keeping the patient in our centers longer, potentially aerosolizing coronavirus, but also exposing our staff to the risk when they're, you know, sending a radiology tech into a room to x-ray a patient without any real benefit that's tangible of obtaining an x-ray at that moment, at least.
That's certainly been one of the strategies here in New Zealand, and it's worked very well, is keeping patients away from each other and away from healthcare providers to stop that spread. And one way that that's being achieved is through an increasing use of telemedicine. So do you foresee this having a role in assisting telemedicine doctors and clinicians from managing COVID possible patients?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great and really important question, a question that all urgent cares are now facing as patient volumes dwindle, is how do we incorporate more telemedicine? And specifically in the evaluation of potential cases of COVID, telemedicine actually gives us a ton of information that will be the most meaningful for making the clinical decision in that moment. Because as things stand here, where this is April 16th in my side of the world, and April 17th for you, but there's really no proven therapy, especially for mild disease, to not only reduce the duration of symptoms, severity of symptoms, but also to prevent people from going to progressing to more serious illness. So if we don't have any good therapy to offer people based on clinical data, and all we need to know is do they need to be on oxygen or not, or do they need to be ventilated or not, then it really becomes a clinical assessment that can be easily done over video. And I think this study lends some additional credence that this chest x-ray, if it's normal in 60 to 70% of cases and minimally abnormal in additional 20 to 30% of cases, then really it questions how much we need to be pushing the issue of obtaining chest radiography in these patients. And that would be one of the main reasons that these people would come in with respiratory symptoms, at least theoretically. So that definitely lends support to the idea of evaluating these patients over telemedicine. We were talking before we recorded, you know, if you look at the guidelines that are being put out by U.S. Acute care organizations, the College of Urgent Care Medicine teamed up with ACEP, the American College of Emergency Physicians, and put together a risk stratification guide for severity assessment. And it really groups patients into two categories where they are either recommended to be managed from home or recommended to be referred to an emergency department. And the data that differentiates whether these patients are high risk or low risk based on these recommendations are all clinical data that can be ascertained from a conversation and visual observation of the patient's breathing pattern, with the exception of pulse oximetry. And I don't know how widely available is home pulse ox in New Zealand, Guy. It's something that has become increasingly used here by average citizens just because of this pandemic, but it's hard for people to find one in a store or on Amazon anymore.
Yeah, it's not something I've become aware of in the past. I mean, I know of people who have, like pilots, for example, might keep them if they fly, you know, at altitude. And there's a few occupations and the like that might, but it's certainly not. The patients we're going to be teleconferencing with are unlikely to have it. So we're using purely visual parameters and information we can gain from them answering questions. And I think this is where this study adds to that body of work, isn't it? That this supports these risk stratification tools, because as doctors, we sometimes feel that we want to do more to help reassure us that we're doing the right thing or that we're going in the right direction. And if in arranging a chest x-ray for somebody is not going to be helpful in determining overall outcomes, but will potentially cause spread and exposure to this illness, then we like having things like this risk stratification and these field guides that you mentioned, the ACEP field guides. It's good to have that kind of data to hand, and it supports us. And I think as clinicians, we like to feel supported by the evidence. And so that's why it's important that people like yourself have made the effort to do this and to do it in such rapid fashion as well. What, did you really have to pull the stops out to get this done in this time? Was it, did you have to call in a lot of favors? Was it a, what was the process?
There's some information I can't disclose in a public forum, but I do owe some favors. No, I think the impetus to work so hard to get this out quickly is that we have a common enemy for once across medicine right now. And so everyone, radiologists, emergency physicians, urgent care physicians, biostatisticians, everyone is facing this as the common enemy. And it shows a lot what can be accomplished when we have a unified sense of purpose. And this is the stuff that excites us as clinicians, is, you know, treating a new illness, and an illness that if we don't treat it correctly has high stakes for the our patients in front of us and for public health. So I think we all really just came together and made it our top priority. And, you know, we don't have any restaurants to go out to or any social plans, so that also helped.
So the as I say, we'll link to the paper in the show notes, and it's available online, and then it will be published later in print. And you've got plans for this being the lead off to further look at ways in which COVID can be assessed both via telemedicine and in person. But I think when we last spoke to you, you were talking about how the Journal of Urgent Care Medicine was going to be developing into its own original research and aiming to get PubMed recognition. This is obviously a big step in that direction. Was this on the part of your plan? Has this been part of your vision for the journal?
We did not envision a global pandemic was going to be part of our plan, but it came along, and it's been a situation of unspeakable tragedy across the entire world. So I don't want to make light of it, but we're trying to maximize our platform during this crisis to help get the word out about what clinical questions need to be answered for urgent care providers. And, you know, we have the only peer-reviewed journal still in the world in urgent care. So there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that. And I think my hope is that this will be well received as we apply for PubMed indexing, and the subsequent studies hopefully will also lend credence to that case. But in the immediate sense, we're really more thinking about how do we get this information out to the urgent care audience, and we have a good platform for that.
And how has it been received outside of urgent care in terms of you've been in contact, obviously you work in emergency departments yourself. It's contributing to the wider medical picture, not just urgent care, I would imagine, because it's a pretty large study, as you were saying.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think the acute assessment of the patients with potential COVID is really fairly homogenous across practice settings, whether it be primary care or emergency medicine or urgent care, because we're trying to minimize testing, minimize contact. Really what it comes down to is a patient in a room and your clinical assessment by looking at them, getting their history, and then the questions we are getting at are what else needs to be done, if anything. And if this is a time when we really need to be asking ourselves, because the cost of ordering tests is not only the expense or the time or the resources, but it's also, you know, the health of healthcare workers, that we really need to know and think about how is this test, based on whatever the result may be, going to change management. And we might be able to, with some additional studies — I don't think this is the final word on this subject — but with some additional studies, be able to find a group of patients where we could say definitively that chest x-ray is really not going to change management, and it's safe to forego that because of the risks associated with using it.
So I will congratulate you and your fellow authors for the effort you've put in to get this paper published in such rapid fashion and contributing to this worldwide fight. I think it's wonderful to see urgent care leading in this regard, and I think you should be congratulated on that. And also keeping to your statement before that you were wanting to push this journal forward, and so it's wonderful to see that, and urgent care around the world will benefit from it. We will, as I say, put the link in the show notes and encourage everybody to read that. And I'll also put the Urgent Care Association, UCAO, Urgent Care of America.
It's the Urgent Care Association. So Urgent Care Association was formerly the Urgent Care Association of America, and they've become a global enterprise. Okay. So they're just the UCA now.
UCA,
their website is still UCAOA. And the College of Urgent Care Medicine is the academic sort of branch of the UCA.
So I will link to those to their risk stratification guide and the ASAP COVID field guide as well, because that's definitely worth reading. We've been lucky here in New Zealand. We've seemed to have missed the big wave, and so a lot of urgent cares haven't had to see the volumes of patients that you guys have. I hope that you remain well up there in the Northern Hemisphere, and that when all of this blows over and we get back to relative normality at the other side of this, urgent care will be further down that track to getting the recognition that we talked about before. But before then, you guys have got a lot on your plate, so I wish you well, and I look forward to speaking to you all in the future as things go on. And on that note, we will be catching up with you again for future podcasts relating to this and maybe some other topics. So we'll definitely hear from Josh again, but thank you for joining us, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to encourage all your audience to you know, the work you're doing is really important, and it's something that we appreciate from across the world, that people are going to work every day, wherever corner of the world they find themselves, and whatever volume of COVID or concern you're finding, it's a new kind of experience to be, you know, thinking that you might be putting your health at risk in a real way when you go to work. So, just my hats off to your audience for doing that hard work, and for also feeling like they're probably back in medical school trying to keep up with the changes that are happening on a daily basis. It feels like following the literature is more like following the stock market nowadays. So I'm sure we'll have an entirely new set of things to talk about next week or the week after when we get together again.
Yeah, well, I look forward to catching up again. And yeah, I think there's a lot of pride in the medical world at the moment when you look around at our colleagues and what's going on, and the universal sort of support and drive to kick this COVID well and truly into touch. So yeah, it's been great talking to you, and stay safe, and we'll be in touch soon.
You as well. Thanks, Guy.